AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. A 22-year-old Mobile, Alabama man out on bond on a drug charge now faces attempted murder charges after a shooting at a spring break party in Panama City Beach, Florida. Bay County Sheriff spokesman Ruth Curley says spring breakers are an easy victims for criminals.
They're here to prey upon the spring breakers, the people in college who are here and they're drunk and they're partying and they're very easy to rob and they're very easy to assault.
Three of the seven people shot at a party early yesterday morning are in critical condition. David Jemichael Daniels is charged with seven counts of attempted murder. Tunisia's prime minister says a suspect in the deadly Tunis Museum attack has been killed in an anti-terror operation. Angela Charlton has more from Paris.
The suspect killed overnight was Khaled Shaib, who is suspected to have a major role in Al-Qaeda's North Africa arm. Shaib was one of nine people killed in these overnight anti-terrorist operations around the country, primarily along the Algerian border.
22 people, mainly foreign tourists, and two gunmen were killed in the March 18th attack. A national unity march is being held today in Tunisia. The Iran nuclear talks inching a bit closer to a possible framework agreement. Officials say the Iranians have tentatively agreed to reduce the number of centrifuges to 6,000 or perhaps fewer at their main nuclear site. They also promised to ship enriched uranium to Russia. European Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini says the goal for the U.S. and its partners remains the same.
I think that we can find solutions that are good for all, that can guarantee that Iran has no nuclear weapons, cannot develop nuclear weapons, but still can develop a civil nuclear program.
Among unresolved issues, a monitoring program to make sure Iran complies with any agreement. Tuesday is the deadline for a framework deal. This is AP Radio News. 25 people have been treated for bumps and bruises after their Air Canada plane skidded off a runway in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Passenger Mike Magnus says the plane might have clipped a power line on the way in.
The nose of the plane has been sheared off or damaged. We lost an engine when we hit the ground. We bounced a couple of times and then popped off one of the engines.
After being treated for minor injuries, Magnus told reporters he was going to have a glass of wine. Two free throws with 6 seconds left keep Kentucky's perfect season rolling as the Wildcats beat Notre Dame 68-66 to go to 38-0 and for a trip to the Final Four. Coach John Calipari says the Irish took it to his club.
We were just scratching to stay in the game.
In last night's other game, Wisconsin had 10 three-point baskets in the second half to roll over Arizona, 85-78. Final four slots will be decided today. Louisville plays Michigan State. Duke takes on Gonzaga. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit AARP.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and we have a great lineup of guests on our show today. Mark Cohen, will you take us through the lineup?
Sure, Pete. First, we're going to talk to Stephen Fradkin, the president of Antiva, Inc. Then we have Lisa Renstrom, the co-founder of Divest Invest Individual. Third, it's a pair, Betty Sullivan and David Benson. Betty's the president and CEO, and David is the vice president of sales, both working at Architectural Ceramics. And we're going to finally end up with Jeff Chandler, the president of American Technology Services, Inc.
And before we get started, let me introduce our co-host who will be helping me with the interviews today. We have Lauren Rizzo, who's with Cressa, Joe Applebaum with Potomac Companies, Mike Mercurio from Offutt Kerman, and we just heard from Mark Cohen from Optifor. Let's begin. Our first guest is Stephen Fradkin, the president of Antiva. What is Antiva, Stephen?
Antiva is a full technology solution provider that focuses on supporting small, mid-sized companies and nonprofit associations in their pursuit to use technology to grow or streamline their businesses.
When was the company founded?
Antiva was founded in 2004.
And how big or small would you say it is today?
Antiva has about 90 full-time employees and offices in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, Colorado, and California.
And are you the founder?
I am the founder.
Why start this business?
Always been a geek at heart, and I've always enjoyed technology and using technology to help grow and develop businesses. And
so always been a geek at heart. At what age did that start showing up?
Well, technically it started showing up when I was about 8 years old when I got my hands on the first computer, but it developed over time as I continued to explore and grow, and really culminated when I was about 13 playing around inside of a CompUSA, accidentally wearing a red shirt, and came across my first client.
So you tell a great story about finding your way into your brother's room at 8 years old and discovering his computer and doing what on it?
It's a little bit of a funny story. Of course, I wasn't allowed to ever go into my brother's room, but fortunately, a squirrel got into the house somehow and started scurrying around and running around and wound up in his room. So I was on the pursuit of the squirrel, eradicated him from the room, and maybe hung out a little bit longer than appropriate, and found his computer and really began playing on it and discovered a little bit of what it can do, including a game at the time called Leisure Suit Larry, and it was an exciting moment for an eight-year-old.
And that launched your fascination with computers and technology?
It did, among a couple other things.
And then at 13, you found yourself in a CompUSA with a red shirt on, and that's where it all began officially for you.
That's correct.
And what tell us about that day.
So that day I was really fascinated by playing around with the CD-ROM that had just been released to the market, and I happened to be wearing a red shirt, and somebody mistook me for an employee. I advised that I did not, in fact, work there, but was happy to provide advice and support on the purchase they were about to make. Heard a little bit about their needs, made some recommendations, and he turned out to be my first residential client and started referring me out to other folks in the community, and I started to grow quite a bit of a base all on word of mouth and referrals in residential technology.
So how did you figure out what to charge this guy?
That's a great question. I actually just took what he thought was fair. And the first couple of times this went down, I got anywhere between $50 or $75 a visit, which was amazing at my age, and eventually made that into a rate. So I took the average of what people were paying me and used it to create what the standard would be. And it wasn't until about 10 years later, when a client pulled me aside and said, "Look, I don't want to tell you this. You can't change my rates, but you're undercharging."
So when did you realize I can make a business out of this?
really from day one. As soon as dollars came my way for services rendered, I knew this had potential.
So you decided I can make a business out of this, and you also decided you needed to go to college.
That's correct.
Why?
What I knew was there are a lot of geeks out there. There are a lot of people that are fascinated with technology, and there are very few that understood business and how technology could align with those businesses. So what I needed to know how to do is to understand business. So I knew I wanted to go to school for accounting. I knew I wanted to study and learn and develop in what really hasn't changed for many years and use it to help organizations grow.
Where did you get your entrepreneurial spirit from? Certainly technology could have simply been a hobby.
Well, I was born and raised in a family of entrepreneurs. My mother ran a boutique high-end optical firm called Village Eye Center for about 40 years. My father ran an accounting firm that grew quite substantively in the area with great clients and team members for about 45 years. So really, I saw them learn, grow, and develop. They didn't come from anything themselves and just grinded out great work. And that kind of was in my blood from day one.
Did you work in those businesses?
I did. At one point in time, I worked in both. More time was spent, though, working inside of the optical firm.
Looking back on it, what did you learn?
I learned a lot. From working in my mother's company, I learned that while you don't need to know everything about what you're doing, if you commit the time and the energy to grind it out, to work through it, to find the right people, to tap the right resources, ultimately you could get anything done, both for your own business as well as your customers.
So you have the technical thing down, you got the accounting thing down, but to run a 90-person company, you have to get the relational thing down.
Yes.
When did that dawn on you?
Well, relationships were from the get-go. Again, my parents both had strong relationships. My father was probably one of the best networkers I've ever met. And ultimately, he cares a lot about everybody he talks to and works with, and everybody then cares about helping and growing with him. So I've always learned that relationships are key. You know, I actually remember a story. I was at a philanthropic event with him when I was about 6 years old, and he offered me a dollar for every person's hand that I shook. At the end of that night, turned out to be about $260, and I have some of those relationships to today.
A lot of times a young entrepreneur who's had big success, done it mostly by himself, has a little difficult time letting go of control.
Yes.
You're nodding yes. Tell us about that.
I am nodding yes. I am definitely a control freak. I've been told by pretty much everybody that I work with that I micromanage and drive them crazy. At the end of the day, letting go of control is very difficult, but my goal is to learn how to release that control, not because I want to release it, but because it's actually in the best interest of the growth of our people and our clients.
So tell us about the culture inside your company.
We actually have a very unique culture. We're a company full of incredible talent that are passionate about learning, growing, and developing with technology and growing with our clients. And we've got a really great company. We've been fortunate enough to be named on the, you know, Washington Business Journal, Washingtonian, best places to work for many, many years. And it's just so awesome to walk around the company and know that everybody kind of is there working towards the same goal and the same vision of wowing and delighting our customers.
How has technology changed since you started the business?
Changes about every 2 weeks. And with the changes, we are able to adapt and grow, and we use them to help our clients, and we need to be a company, and we need to have a culture that embraces change in order to be successful.
You referenced in the green room that school was a means to an end. Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years?
School was not a means to an end for me. I apologize if that came off that way. School was a great opportunity to learn about accounting and to develop. When I was in school through high school and college, it turned out that being there I knew I needed to focus on taking classes and doing the coursework right. And by doing that, I forewent some of the more interpersonal relationships, making friends. So it certainly wasn't a means to an end, but it was a focus point on getting education and not necessarily making friends. In terms of your question relating to where do I see us going, the truth is I want to grow as much as we can as a company, relinquishing control and allowing it to run without me, without sacrificing any of the care that we've given to our staff and to our employees. I'm sorry, our staff and our clients.
Great. So I'm curious, why did you buy your mother's company, and are you going to buy your father's company too? What was that all about?
So I bought into my mother's company. So I currently own 25% of it, and the doctor who has been active in the firm for now 13 years owns the other 75%. It's an honor to be in the company. It has a great reputation, and I'm there to hopefully help the doctor on the business side as he continues to grow and develop that firm. In terms of acquiring my father's firm, unfortunately, it's just too late. And he had a number of great partners over the years, about 10 years, maybe 15 years ago now. They did buy out his shares, and now he was acquired or absorbed by Rafa. So not on the table unless I go after Rafa.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
Trying every day to actually be a good husband and father. And I wouldn't say I accomplished it yet.
Okay, and how about your proudest moment up till now?
Ultimately, I don't have the personality that allows me to even think about that. So I could tell you about my biggest failures, and I could list them on forever. But
that's good enough.
I'll share that another day.
What's the website address, Stephen?
It's Antiva.com. That's N as in Nancy, T as in Tom, I as in Igloo, V as in Victor, A as in Alpha.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Stephen Fradkin, who's the president of Antiva. Don't forget to visit our website, Executive Leaders Radio, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as a marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the DC area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International. And this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO of The Success Doctor. This is Les Mullen, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And for this segment, we have Lisa Renstrom, who's the co-founder of a company called Divest Invest Individual. Tell us a little bit about this organization.
Well, it is a campaign, not a company. It's a not-for-profit, but it's a campaign within a movement. And it is a platform where people who want to publicly declare that they are going to divest their funds, their portfolios, their money, their 401k from the fossil fuel industry and invest in the new renewable energy clean economy that we are transitioning towards.
And why would somebody want to do that from your perspective?
Well, number one, they'd want to do it because it's the right financial decision. Fossil fuel companies that we, the top 200, have stranded assets that are not going to be exploited, or those reserves are going to become stranded. So it's the right financial decision, and it's a good ethical, moral decision to enable to just declare that we need to address climate change. It's something that you can do personally besides turning off your light bulbs. And it has, you know, a larger impact on people and the climate world, the financial industry, and then you can invest in the future.
So a person would go about doing this by doing what?
So they would make a pledge, which is what this platform is about, and then they would go to their employer and say, hey, I really need a fossil-free 401k option. Or they would go to their broker or money manager and say, I need to make sure that I am out of the top 200 fossil fuel companies and into the future.
And when did you start this movement?
Well, I didn't start the movement. The movement started with students who went to their universities in the last 3-4 years. So across the nation, kids have been saying, we want the endowments of these universities to be out of the fossil fuel industries. Then in coordination and I working with the Wallace Global Fund, who really brought it to philanthropy and said, we want foundations to put some wind behind the sails and say, here are some group of quite highly intelligent, taking their fiduciary responsibility very seriously, who says, we can do this and we're doing it successfully. And then we took it to individuals this year.
So I can imagine it would take a unique kind of an individual to lead this effort. What is it about you that's ideal for this?
I guess I am a change agent, and I like if when I see something that needs to be a different way, I like to be a part of making it a different way.
Have you
way.
Always been like this?
Probably.
Tell us about the first time.
The first time was probably with a personal family business where I had to, where it was set up in a way that was not okay, and I had to sort of take a decade and fix it.
That's a long time. Was it worth it?
Yes.
So I can imagine that not everybody's going to be thrilled with the fact that you're trying to direct assets to something other than fossil fuels.
No, they're not thrilled. Exxon has told their shareholders that they will exploit all of those assets on their balance sheet, so they will not be stranded.
but I would beg to differ.
So are you prepared for that kind of resistance and blowback to your idea?
I think, you know, someone here was talking about a client that they have who is investing in the grid, and it's certainly not just me. I mean, the world is changing, and as we move to a new energy economy, the kinds of innovation and new options are so huge, and it's kind of like moving from, you know, horses to cars, and now we're moving from fossil fuels to renewable.
Where do you want to be this time next year?
This time next year, late last year, we announced $50 billion of fossil-free assets. The movement did, including the Rockefeller family, who divested their foundation assets. The Mark Ruffalo was our spokesman. That was fun. And he has said that he's going to get the rest of the Avengers to divest. But we would like to take that to $150 billion in December. And next year, I would like a climate agreement that comes out of the summit in Paris in December, and putting a price on carbon so that all markets can integrate this cost into doing business and we can move towards addressing climate change.
So for somebody listening in that might be inspired by the idea and then talking to the person running their 401k, what would you advise them to say to that person to help this happen for them?
I would ask them to make the pledge at divestinvest.org. We ask to take action within 3 to 5 years. It might even take that long because there aren't that many options right now. There aren't that many fossil-free options, but we're creating demand. So we want the major 401k providers to begin to offer a 401k option.
Where are you from, Lisa?
I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska.
Tell us about life in Omaha, Nebraska as a young person.
Omaha's great. We had a garden, we had cattle, we had some sheep. I didn't get to cut hay much because I had asthma, but it was just a beautiful, you know, to be able to interact with animals and with nature and gardens and growing and springtime has influenced a lot of my life.
Yeah, and you tell us about some time that you spent in Mexico and breathing really dirty air and being impacted by that too.
Yeah, my environmental kind of ethic world began in Charlotte, North Carolina, where they didn't want to be Atlanta. And that's where I began with a smart growth effort in Charlotte. And Mexico City, where I lived for a period and in Acapulco for a period, you would go to Mexico City, and it had been this valley, this beautiful valley, and your nails would get black, your hair would get dirty. And I just didn't want to see Charlotte do that, and I kind of just didn't want to see us do that to the planet.
Yeah, so it's a stark contrast from that beautiful background that you grew up in, and so this is very personal to you, isn't it?
Well, I think it's personal to all of us. I mean, we all want to, I don't know, I get a lot of energy from nature and from outside and from breathing fresh air and from swimming in gorgeous water, and I want to give that, we all do.
So if you could fast forward 5-10 years down the road and you've had the impact you want to have, how is the planet going to be different?
I think that we really will be harnessing our daily energy from the daily heat that sun produces. It's the biggest nuclear reactor that we have, and it drives the wind, and it drives the water, and it drives the waves, and that's where we're going to get our energy from. And we are going to be amazed that we ever used energy that was so polluting to drive what we need to do.
Right. What's the website address?
Divestinvest.org/individual.
One more time?
Divestinvest.org/individual.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Lisa Renstrom, who's the co-founder of Divest Invest Individual. I'd like to thank my co-host for helping with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into too particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying, and we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offitkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offit Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your business spotlight.
Joining us for this business spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs, and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offit Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and for this segment, we're joined by Betty Sullivan and David Benson, who are with Architectural Ceramics. Betty, what is Architectural Ceramics?
Architectural Ceramics is a family-owned business. It's a chain of tiles and stone stores in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area that's been around for 32 years. And we also do commercial work around the country.
32 years. Who started this business?
My husband started it in 1983.
Yeah. And when did you join?
I joined it in 2001.
Why?
Well, I just come off of having Lyme disease, And my husband and son were driving the company truck down to Katrina to bring water and food and stuff, and I was watching the shop and trying to get into the armory to run some havoc over there. And I found myself selling tile to people in the showroom, and I was kind of a techie at the time.
And prior to that, you had just this intimate knowledge of stone and ceramic?
Not at all.
So how did you do it?
I had a sales background, so I did. I had basically been in technology, so.
Yeah, you had spent some time in venture capital, I understand.
Yeah.
So how do you suppose spending time there helped you in this business?
Well, I mean, I knew about sales, and so I knew how to listen to clients and figure out what their needs are, and then run and ask somebody else what to do. In relation to that and figure things out. So that was really the bulk.
What surprised you most when you got involved in the business, about the business?
I think what surprised me the most is how interesting it was, because it's creative. I became a designer, and I was able to see the art in it, and so it's political. I mean, there's architects, designers, bankers, so it's complex. And it's emotional, because the purchase is emotional.
Yeah,
you're going to live with it. Tile you keep forever. You know, you change your blankets, your pillows, your sofas, but that stays forever. So it's and it goes now to the second generation. So yeah. You know, people are coming from the next generation. So
you've brought your son with you today, David Benson.
Yes.
So welcome, David.
Thank you.
What's your role with the company?
I'm our VP of sales and part owner of the company.
And when did you become involved?
I came in full-time in 2005, but prior to that, when I was 10, I was putting away tile on the shelves at night.
So 2005, that was still pretty good times in this this area. 2007,
yeah.
Not so good. How did you guys get through this last recession?
Well, we basically, I think the hardest part was to get rid of a third of the staff and excuse them and help them try to find jobs and really just shrink as much as possible, get rid of all of our assets and really buckle down with the, you know, people that we had and make it through, and our kids, and work day and night, essentially.
You mentioned the staff that you did retain took a pay cut. How do you foster such loyalty?
Back then, sorry to interrupt, Mom, but back then, you know, our employees had been with us, you know, 10, 15 years, a lot of them. And we were there, you know, they were there with us in good times. And we said, we love you as an employee. There's no other tile company that will support you as much as we will, and they realized that and stuck through it with us.
So what's it like for, what were you about in your early 20s when all this was going on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's it like for an early 20s kid just learning business for the first time to have to deal with this?
Well, it was very exciting just getting out in college, you know, full-time in 2005 and, you know, going out visiting clients door-to-door, getting them into the showrooms. And then you got to the point where, you know, it was great. People were coming in the door, and then it stopped.
Yeah.
And so you suddenly realize that you got to get out there. You got to be knocking on doors, be on the phones constantly, and telling the other staff that you will not have a job unless you continue to do that.
You're both sitting here smiling with one another, and many family business owners can't sit in the same room. What's the secret sauce, and what's the biggest challenge?
I would say for me, the secret sauce is just the fact that I trust my other family members. I trust my mom. I know she's going to work the hardest, you know, for us and the other employees in the company. Mom?
Did you have a choice? Of course you had a choice. Why did you want to be in this business and not go off on your own and do something else?
Going off on my own has, you know, has been an option even to this day. But I've still, you know, I think that I need to stick with the company and stick by my family. And I know that I have a very strong foundation there, and I want to support my family, my two daughters now.
So what do you most admire about your mom as a business person?
One of the biggest things that she's taught me is how to grow things and how to you know, separate yourself different from each other and different from others. And so I've just been, you know, extremely excited to learn that from her, and now I'm starting to find other things to invest in or grow, you know, personally in beyond just the tile company.
And how about you, Betty? What impresses you most about David with respect to his business acumen?
Well, he's really good with relationships with people, and when he meets someone, he really finds out a lot about them and sees how he can help them with what they're doing and what their visions are. And he listens, and he values, you know, what I have to say. And that trait he carries forward with other people.
So David.
And he has six sisters that he's very patient with.
Six sisters? Are they all in the business?
Two are in the business currently.
So is it too soon to ask this question? After 5 years of the most brutal recession I've experienced in my adult life, what have I learned?
What have I learned? That hard work will definitely get you through, working late nights, and then caring.
How about you, Betty?
I think that I learned that you need to be, that saying no is okay.
Saying no is okay? Say more about that.
Oh, I remember there was a guy that I met in Atlanta when I used to do the venture capitalist stuff. He said, you know, the best thing to do is, you know, the biggest thing to do is to say no. And I was always afraid to say no to people. And I think that no response and a no is okay to do. Like you just really have to have your plan, and people, you know, as you grow, constantly give you new ideas and do this and do that, but you really just need to stick to what your plan is and put all the ideas and the things from everybody in a pile and examine them, you know, periodically. But midstream yeses are really something you can't.
Adds too much to the plate.
Yeah, it adds too much to the plate.
So you guys have been around a long time. I bet there are just evidence of your product all over this town. Mm-hmm. What's it like to walk into a place and recognize your product?
It feels awesome.
Yeah.
I mean,
give us an example of where we might see it.
The coolest thing is was being in the Blair House and seeing Bush like pull into the White House across the street and telling my husband, "Hey, honey, the neighbors are, you know, doing some high profile places." But you know, hotels, restaurants, Marriotts, nice homes, a lot of the nice homes around, and government, you know, Supreme Court.
Where do you want the business to be in 5 or 10 years from now? David, you go first.
Yeah, I'll go first. In 5 to 10 years, I would see us, obviously we're in three states, you know, three areas, metro areas right now. We would be almost more nationally commercially. We have reps in multiple cities, but we're going south towards Atlanta. So in 5 to 10 years, I would see more locations beyond the six, maybe two more, and more commercial reps nationwide.
What do you recognize you have to become in order to lead this company into that growth?
Personally or yeah. as a company?
No, you personally.
I don't know if I've fully realized it yet, but I definitely feel like I need to grow in the areas of finance.
Great. What's the website address?
www.architecturalceramics.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Betty Sullivan and David Benson, who are the owners of Architectural Ceramics. I'd like to thank my co-host for helping me with the lineup. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
Jim Matthews.
And Jim, which organization are you with?
I'm with the National Association of Railroad Passengers.
And what is the National Association of Railroad Passengers?
We are the oldest and the largest nonprofit organization representing the voice of passengers around the United States, people who take trains for work and for play.
So what do you like about your job?
I like the fact that we can make a difference, and we can make a difference right away.
How can you make a difference? What are you talking about?
The first 3 weeks I was on the job, we were able to make a real impact on the late trains problem that was snarling everything in this past summer. The Surface Transportation Board said they had not heard from passengers, and it was hard for them to take action, and we gave them 1,300 passenger reactions in 72 hours.
Wow. So you really were able to make a difference. Why does this job turn you on?
Again, it's always made a difference in my life to have volunteers. I've been involved in volunteerism of one sort or another since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I've been working in industry in an executive role, and this opportunity came along to be part of a volunteer organization. And I thought, this will be a good chance.
Wow. So you're really helping you're the voice of the organization. This organization is helping railroad passengers.
Correct.
What is the website address of the organization?
NARPRail.org.
Let me have that one more time.
NARPRail.org.
And your name again?
Jim Matthews.
And the name of the organization?
Is the National Association of Railroad Passengers.
And this has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
My name is Joe Dugow.
Joe, what organization are you with?
I'm with Interstate Moving and Storage and Logistics.
And what do you guys do?
We do it all.
Like what?
We move anything and everything from every point to every point in the world.
That sounds like a pretty complicated operation, actually.
It isn't complicated. People call and they want to move a slot machine to Atlantic City, New Jersey. We'll do it. You need to move your father-in-law back to Britain, we'll move him internationally. You're getting a divorce, we'll move the wife here, we'll move you there.
So what do you enjoy about your job?
I love knocking on that door and seeing what's in the inside, because I don't know. Every day I get to see four or five different people with different aspirations, different everything.
So you're in a business development role. Your job is to bring in new business.
I'm an old soldier.
What's that?
An interstate has a tough job to do.
Yeah.
If they need it done, they send Joe Dugow. That's me, 35 years in the business, to get the job done correctly.
So you're the guy, you're all about relationships and getting
stuff. You're absolutely correct. When I get in that door, it ain't about pricing. It's about talking. It's about details. What do you need? How can I solve them?
Boy, you know how to close a deal. What's the website address?
The website is invan.com.
Let me have that one more time.
It would be invan.com.
We've been speaking with, what's your name again?
My name is Joe Dugow.
And the name of the organization?
Is Interstate Moving and Storage.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
Here for today's Business Spotlight is Chris Vannetti, Vice President of Contract and Project Staffing Services at Hire Strategy. Chris, what is Hire Strategy?
Hire Strategy is a D.C. Metro-based professional services and staffing firm specializing in information technology placements as well as HR and administrative, sales and marketing, and accounting and finance.
And what do clients love about working with Hire Strategy?
We take an old school approach to staffing. And what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day before social media and email, it was all about people. And we're one of the few and last firms in this marketplace, probably nationwide, that really interviews in person, takes the time to know their candidates, and 100% takes the time to know their clients, their pushes and pulls, the positives and negatives, to make the right match. So it's truly a consultative approach.
Mm-hmm. What do employees love about working for Hire Strategy?
It's definitely our culture. And the employees that work for us, I think they would all to a person say, we believe in leadership, not management. And that's one of our key mottos. And leading people is a definite thing that we like to do, and we like to do it often.
So what does that mean for a new employee? They get to be a leader?
They can get to be a leader, but they're leader of their own practice, of their own business. We allow them to be entrepreneurial. We allow them to make their own decisions, and we're there to help them along the way, correcting them if need be. But motivation and leadership is the one way that we think that people are going to excel with us.
What do you love most about your job?
I love that I get the opportunity to be a leader and to be entrepreneurial and work with a great bunch of people. and a great group of executives along with myself. So it's a great place to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.hirestrategy.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offutt Kerman. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And for this segment, we have Jeff Chandler, who's the president of American Technology Services, Inc. What is American Technology Services, Inc., Jeff?
American Technology Services, or ATS, is a shorter version. We're an IT services company that focuses on small and mid-sized businesses, and our approach is to provide an end-to-end solution for those kinds of companies. We're a little bit different from our competitors in that we take a more consultative stance with the technology.
And because of that difference, what do you think you can do that others can't?
We try to see the business problem and not just solve technology problems. My analogy is it's the difference between having a plumber come to your house and fix your refrigerator ice maker problem versus wanting to know what kind of refrigerator is it and why you have it in the first place and how you use it every day.
Mm-hmm. When did you start the company?
I started the company in 1994.
And why?
I was working in a big systems consulting business at that time and just reached the point where I felt that the distance between me and the customer was getting longer and longer. In a big organization, it felt more and more bureaucratic, and so those were the main motivations. But I also realized some things about myself, specifically that I'm stubborn and really don't like to take orders from anybody else.
So you decided to do your own thing?
Right.
What surprised you most about the early days of starting your business?
I think the reality coming from a big company into a small company was pretty dramatic. You realize that there really isn't anybody there to help you. You're all by yourself, and it's whatever you make of it.
So you wake up one morning and you realize, holy mackerel, I don't know this that I need to know. What was that?
I think for me it was the reality of trying to do everything and anything all the time. Mm-hmm. But I had previously gotten a MBA, and it was really the first time when all of the things that I learned in business school actually came into use. I really started to apply all of the stuff that I learned in school.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Originally, I grew up in North Georgia, a small town called Dalton.
And mom and dad, what were they doing back then?
My father was in the carpet business, which is what Dalton is known for. And he went into the business with his uncle, starting a carpet factory in the 1940s. My mother was a kindergarten teacher.
Uh-huh. And what were you like as a kid?
Very shy, very introverted, probably nerdy, if that word didn't exist back then, but really focused on details.
You tell us a great story about meeting Buckminster Fuller. Who was that guy?
Yeah, in college, Buckminster Fuller came to school and spoke, and he said that one of the things that he realized about himself was because he was extremely farsighted, he saw the world in a different way, and he saw broad patterns as opposed to details. I was really the opposite because I'm extremely nearsighted, so I saw the really minute details that other people missed.
And looking back, how did that kind of shape how you got to here?
Well, I was interested in science and nature from the very beginning, but in applying that kind of attitude toward business, it helped me see the details in how business runs, and in particular in how systems and technology are put together and used in business.
How many employees would you say?
We have about 65 staff now.
So when did you realize that I got to get the relational thing right too?
You mean in terms of
managing employees, getting them inspired to follow the vision, all of that?
Yeah, I think there was not a moment. I kind of knew that from the beginning, but as the company evolves, the needs change and the relationships change over time.
So where do you want to be 5 years from now?
5 years from now, you know, we're currently about 65 staff, so we're focused on getting to 100 staff right now. We set a goal for ourselves that every few years, 3 to 5 years out in the future. So currently our goal is to 100 staff. 5 years from now, we'll reset that to maybe 250 people.
Do you fear that you may lose your the connection that you value so much with your customer?
Yeah, it's a danger that I think about. I'm aware that we want to have a company that's not very bureaucratic because of my own preferences, but you reach the point where you have to become a little bit bureaucratic, so there's a fine line between too much and too little bureaucracy in a company that's growing.
How do you guard against that?
You talk about it with the staff, with the management team. You sensitize them to the realities and point out when things are happening that you don't want them to be doing.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
My leadership style is pretty hands-off. I don't see myself as a micromanager. Sometimes that's a flaw because you let people have too much freedom to do things. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather do that and let them fail and learn from their mistakes than micromanaging people.
So technology is changing daily. How do you keep up with it and stay relevant that way?
It's really a challenge. In our business, the technology literally changes every couple of weeks. But what we've done internally is created a technology council that thinks about and discusses the current trends, maybe not things that are immediately going to affect business, but things that we think will have an influence over the next couple of years.
What advice would you give someone wanting to start a business?
I think the decision to start a business is easy to think about, but to actually do it takes a little bit of gumption. And one of my mentors told me, just do it. What are you waiting for? Just do it. And so you just have to get past your own fears of walking out the door and starting it.
What was your biggest fear?
My biggest fear in starting the company, you mean?
Yeah.
Again, it was, can I really do it? What happens if I fail? That sort of feeling.
Is it the absence of fear, or is it your relationship to fear that kind of is the important thing here?
I think for me it was having not ever done anything like that. I didn't know what to expect, but once I was in it, I actually enjoyed it a lot.
You made a distinction between risk versus being able to deal with uncertainty, and I thought, could talk more about the uncertainty piece of opening a new business.
Right. That's actually, I've heard that from other people who've started businesses, but I think people fear failure and for that reason are unwilling to take risks. But I think as an entrepreneur, it's really about being comfortable with uncertainty, about not knowing what next year is really going to be like. But if you have a strong vision and are committed to your ideas, you can make things happen. I think Ted Turner is a great example of that.
What's the website address?
The website is www.networkats.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Jeff Chandler, who's the president of American Technology Services. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today. Mark, will you take us through that, please?
Sure. First, we talked to Steve Fradkin, the president of Intiva, then Lisa Renstrom, co-founder of Divest Invest Individual. Third was the duo of Betty Sullivan and David Benson of Architectural Ceramics. And we just heard from Jeff Chandler, the president of American Technology Services, Inc.
Thanks. Don't forget to visit our website, Executive Leaders Radio, for more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. And to hear the show again, visit us at businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial.